you happen to know what the defense budget was for 1982?
$700 million a day. Excuse me, but I got to go.
I'd like to call my daughter in Dar es Salaam. Yeah. You happen to know what time it is in Tanzania?
12 hours later than it is here. That woman is crazy. I'll see you later, ma'am.
It seems like you already know every fact there is.
What good is knowledge or the facts?
If you know, then you must act. When the armies of the night are drawing near, people got to hear this warning.
People don't want to know.
But you can see the storm clouds forming.
I've seen it all before.
The armies of the night are drawing near.
Armies of the night are drawing near. Armies of the night are drawing near.
Hello, this is your host on the continuing investigation into who killed Martin Luther King, President John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Malcolm X, Paul Kangas. And we're continuing with the testimony given by Oliver Stone before Congress, May 28, 1992, testimony that was covered by almost none of the media in the whole United States, totally stonewalled. The stonewall must come down when even the so-called progressive newspapers in San Francisco and the Bay Area and progressive radio stations don't cover Stone's testimony trying to open up the Watergate tapes and put Nixon in jail and put Bush in jail and open up the Martin Luther King files and the John Kennedy files, and none of the other media in the United States cover it, then something's wrong. That's why we're trying to present the material in the most creative, original fashion possible so that you can get the facts and you can depend on radio station KPOO and to continue the investigation even when nobody else it dares to look. We're not trying to imitate the New York Times. We're not timid. We're not part of the herd. We're trying to provide creative, original leadership in this issue.
...of this scope. We should look, the House and the Senate should look at the Operation Mongoose files. It should be open. There is a second conspiracy I hypothecate, and that is the conspiracy to cover it up. And that cover-up, I believe, has been going on for 28 years, and most recently expressed itself in the vehement attacks and misrepresentations on my film. That cover-up, I believe, involved people like Lyndon Johnson. I think the appointment of the Warren Commission was a means by which to derail a serious homicide investigation, which was never accomplished. A trial should have been held in Texas. The body should have been examined in Texas by, and as we know, the Bethesda autopsy through the investigation of James Garrison, we know that autopsy was a compromised, if not a rigged affair. The cover-up extends, I believe, to the FBI and Mr. Hoover, at that time chairman of the FBI. Mr. Hoover's, let's say, to use a euphemism, open dislike for the Kennedys. And I think it extends to people in the Warren Commission, such as Alan Dulles, whose motives, I think, are subject to scrutiny. But I don't think necessarily that the people involved in the cover-up were people involved in the conspiracy to kill him. What I did in the movie was show a paradigm of possibilities. I showed a president that deeply divided the country, made many enemies through policies against intended to end the Cold War. His American University speech, I think, is an eloquent testimony by an American president to ending the Cold War, signing the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. It was a major breakthrough. Backdoor negotiations with Fidel Castro, a warming relationship with Premier Khrushchev of Russia, a strict no-combat policy in Laos and in Vietnam, a no-combat policy in Cuba on two occasions, Bay of Pigs and prior to the missile crisis of October 62. I think we have a president that was moving on many fronts to rock the boat, to shake the establishment. And I think we must look there for the root causes of people who were, if not involved in assassinating the president, were certainly relieved to see him go.
Thank you.
I had one slight misstatement I would like to correct. I said H.L. Hunt when I met Howard Hunt. H.L. Hunt is a private citizen. Howard Hunt was a government employee. He was a CIA agent who was involved, as you know, with Watergate. So
we had both of them before the committee, so... Did you attempt to get some of the material that you referred to earlier that was held by the administration or some of the agencies of the administration?
We have used the services of the archive. The name escapes me, but basically Kevin Walsh is running the
archives.
What's it called? The Assassination Archives here in Washington. They've been trying for years with Freedom of Information Acts to get information out. We use a lot of their work because obviously to make a movie we had a year's time span, and in order to get Freedom of Information documents it takes a lot longer. We used also a lot of public, private researchers have demanded this information. We used their information that they had. But we have not been able to talk to the people that I mentioned before. They do not want to talk to us. Obviously, I feel strongly that an inquiry should be made on these living people, and they should be questioned.
Did you attempt to talk to former President Gerald Ford before you made the movie?
I think Gerald Ford has spoken very clearly about where he stands. He's written about it. As you know, he released a book even before, he released an article even before the Warren Commission was made public. Setting the tone of a lone gunman. President Ford's been very outspoken in the defense of the lone gunman theory, and I believe he's made public everything he knows.
But did you attempt to speak?
No, sir, we did not.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any further questions at this point.
Thank you very much. The chair is pleased to recognize the gentleman from Arkansas, Mr. Ray Thornton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pleasure to be here today on this important hearing. I can't help but reflect that in 1960 I was in Los Angeles when we nominated President Kennedy as the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. And his assassination was one of the truly traumatic events of the century. I think that it is hard to know the questions, but I think we do know today the answer. The answer is to adopt H.J. Res. 454 and to allow the American people full access to all of the information concerning this tragic event. I do want to commend you, Mr. Stone, for bringing the problem to the attention of the American people, and simply to say that it is time that we move forward.
I would hate to have to be in a position where I would have to make a film called MLK to get released the files on Martin Luther King, which, as you know, is also part of the HSCA files. The 850 boxes, I believe, contain much of the Martin Luther King material, and I think it should be similarly unsealed. There are certainly even fewer national security considerations involved, and no possible foreign policy consequences in the Martin Luther King case. I realize it might be distracting to seek to amend House Joint Resolution 454 to include the...
Let's don't include that in this one. I mean, we really... I have no problem with moving forward on that, but I really think that for us to try to do that would confuse the issue and create some real serious problems.
Although I think it would be good if some kind of oversight mechanism could be established in the legislature that cases could be looked at in the future, such as the Martin Luther King case, the Robert Kennedy case, the Richard Nixon Watergate case, because these are all part, I think, of a overriding and similar syndrome that has afflicted American politics since World War II. And I would urge the committee to think seriously about our history and what has been told to the American people, and to try to approach the type of glasnost that we've seen in the last few years in Eastern Europe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stone, I hope you'll pardon the analogy, but I've been struck with remembering that President Lincoln once introduced Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, as this is the lady who started the Civil War. And of course, the president was making a reference to the impact of a mass distributed idea, then limited, of course, to a book. And I think it applies here, because I think that even more powerfully with a movie, of course, one can agree or disagree with your theories, and I think you yourself call them hypotheses. You advance them as possibilities. The problem is we're debating them in the dark. Was there more than one gunman? If there was more than one gunman, that suggests a conspiracy. Whose conspiracy? And then after the fact, was there a pressure on the Warren Commission to substantiate a one gunman theory, no matter what else was out there? All of this is unknown. It may, as you said, always be unknown. But again, I want to say 30 years after the fact, I think it's time that all of this information came out, and then the theories can be debated and perhaps all but one put to rest. And I want to commend you for being here and testifying today. Thank you. And I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
This is extensive and in...
The next speaker you hear is Congressman Martinez, who's going to be asking the question of whether or not how Mr. Oliver Stone evaluated each source of information.
It estimated the power either of the entertainment media or the news media to influence and sway people in the way they think. Very much so that many people will inherently read whatever they read and believe it instantly, and then it... even if other facts come out later to disprove the first belief, they are hard-pressed to change their mind. So my question really is, when you were in trying to be as honest in your movie as you possibly could and still keep the dramatic value of it, did you have a process of evaluating those people that came forth with information?
Sir, I evaluated everything, and I think in every case I always had a second source for every fact as stated in the movie. Where I speculated, the characters, if you watch it closely, say maybe, what if, let's speculate, shall we? I use that kind of dialogue, that kind of language. I also should, I'm sure you know that when the assassination occurred, many people in Europe and all over the world doubted the cover story that was put out that afternoon. By 5:30, the press had us believe that Lee Oswald gave us the complete profile of Lee Oswald before he was even charged with the murder of the president. At 5:30, he was charged at 12:30 that night. At 5:30, a profile of him as a lone nut, deranged communist was in the press, and it was worldwide. Colonel Fletcher Prouty read about it in New Zealand. I'm sure if you were in Ethiopia or Germany, you read the same story. It was a wire story. Colonel Prouty confirmed to me many of these suspicions that this was a black operation. It was run by intelligence, and Colonel Prouty has a long and distinguished record in our government, and he knew people like Alan Dulles, and he was, a very strong second source to people like Jim Garrison and Jim Mars in his book Crossfire. We threw out a lot of information that was spectacular and sensational out of the movie. I think we could have create even more fireworks. We could have gone one step further. There is much evidence to pointing to the fact that Lyndon Johnson made a phone call to the chief of police of the Dallas, Will Fritz, to tell him that he had his man. We now know from Charles Crenshaw's revelations, number one bestseller this week, that he was a doctor at Parkland Hospital, that President Johnson called when Oswald was on the table, dying, and asked if the last rites could be attained, a confession could be obtained from Oswald. Many of this information was available to us, but we did not use it because of its sensationalistic nature. We tried to be responsible, and we tried to get second sources on everything we had in the movie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Stone. You're to be commended because you have brought to light certain events that maybe escaped the public before, that have caused them to have the curiosity to want to know more. So I commend you.
The gentleman from Minnesota, Mr. Colin Peterson. No comment. Last question goes to Frank Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stone, if this material is released, and I hope it is, do you intend to make another movie?
I would hate to have to be in a position where I would have to make a film called MLK to get released the files on Martin Luther King, which, as you know, is also part of the HSCA files, The 850 boxes, I believe, contain much of the Martin Luther King material, and I think it should be similarly unsealed. There are certainly even fewer national security considerations involved, and no possible foreign policy consequences in the Martin Luther King case. I realize it might be distracting to seek to amend House Joint Resolution 454 to include the...
Let's don't include that in this one. I mean, I have no problem with moving forward on that, but I really think that for us to try to do that would confuse the issue and create some real serious problems.
Although I think it would be good if some kind of oversight mechanism could be established in the legislature, that cases could be looked at in the future, such as the Martin Luther King case, the Robert Kennedy case, the Richard Nixon Watergate case, because these are all part, I think, of a overriding and similar syndrome that has afflicted American politics since World War II. And I would urge the committee to think seriously about our history and what has been told to the American people, and to try to approach the type of glasnost that we've seen in the last few years in Eastern Europe.
I can say this on behalf of the entire committee, that we appreciate your contribution to our country's attempt to become more open, not just in your artistic work, but in your very thoughtful presentation here.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The second panel consists of two attorneys who served as counsel to major investigations surrounding the assassination of President Kennedy. One was on the Warren Commission, the other was on the Senate Intelligence Committee. I ask Howard Willens and James Johnson to come forward. We welcome you, gentlemen. We have your prepared statements that will be included in the record. We would appreciate if you'd summarize your testimony. And Mr. Johnson, counsel to Senate Intelligence Committee, working under the late Senator Frank Church, we will invite you to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is James Johnston. I'm a lawyer in Washington.
Is your microphone on, sir?
It says on.
Well, pull it up closer.
In 1976, I was counsel to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, chaired by Senator Frank Church and called the Church Committee. Its files on intelligence investigations into President Kennedy's assassination, as well as the Warren Commission files, will be opened to the public by the joint resolution. While I have seen the classified files in these two investigations, my testimony today is based on public reports. I strongly support opening these files. The Church Committee's investigation may be less well known than the others, but in ways it may have been the most dramatic. It called three non-agency witnesses. Two of these witnesses were murdered, and the third witness was murdered before he could testify.
Who were they?
Mr. Chairman, one of the witnesses was Mr. Roselli. Another witness, the witness that was murdered before he could testify, was Sam Giancana. And the third witness, I'd prefer not to disclose his name.
Thank you.
The so-called secret files of the Warren Commission and the Church Committee are principally intelligence documents. There's no smoking gun that will contradict the finding that Lee Harvey Oswald killed the president. However, I strongly urge that these files be open. I think it will create open a public process that will permit the American public to look at this material and to decide for themselves whether everything that was classified has been made available. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so very much. We now, and I want to agree with you that the Church Committee was exceedingly important. It did a very important service. It was done under very adverse and controversial circumstances. I commend you for your work on that committee. We now turn to Mr. Howard P. Willens. You're just about the only one still around from the Warren Commission, and we're delighted to have you before the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Howard Willens. I'm a member of a local law firm, and I appreciate this opportunity to appear before the subcommittee to testify regarding HJ Resolution 454. I appear here today as a former assistant counsel of the President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy, better known as the Warren Commission. At the time the commission was appointed by President Johnson, I served as a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Criminal Division of the United States Department of Justice. I was asked by the Assistant Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General to assist the commission in getting organized and performing its responsibilities. As in the military, when you're asked to volunteer, I volunteered to assist in this mission. I worked full-time for the commission and as liaison to the Department of Justice from December of 1963 until publication of the report in September 1964. It was an extraordinary public assignment that demanded the best efforts of all of us associated with the commission. To the suggestion that the commission was a group of insiders, I would remind the members of the committee that with the exception of myself alone, every lawyer who worked for the commission was from private life. They were a diverse group of different backgrounds and political views with different experience in the profession. They had distinguished credentials not then, and they've gone on to serve the public in a variety of respects and in the academic community ever since.
Okay, enough. That last speaker you heard was one of the liars for the former President Johnson's committee to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy. The actual legal name of the original investigation committee was known as the President's Committee on the Investigation of President John Kennedy. It was President Lyndon Johnson, and since Johnson was one of the co-conspirators involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, directly involved in it, he didn't want his name attached to the he didn't want it to be said the Johnson Committee to investigate the assassination of President Kennedy, because eventually people would figure out that Johnson was one of the people involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, and it was too close to home. So Johnson convinced Earl Warren to allow them to use Earl Warren's name as a fig leaf to cover up Johnson's name on the name of the commission. And one of the reasons being is that Earl Warren was senile, as you heard in testimony before Congress. Earl Warren was basically a senile puppet robot that Johnson and Nixon could whisper anything they wanted to in Earl Warren's ear, and Earl Warren would repeat it like a dummy. Earl Warren was somebody that was just a senile old man who was used by the CIA just like they would use a dummy. Earl Warren was used to cover up the assassination of John Kennedy simply because he was so totally out of it. Okay, let me bring you up to date. This is June 1992, and the status of the House committee that's looking into the assassination of President Kennedy is that they are doing their investigation now. They're doing their research. So if you have any comments you would like to send to them, send them to John Conyers, C-O-N-Y-E-R-S, the Subcommittee on Government Operations, Washington, D.C., and he'll get it. It's important that people comment. More important, it's that people sign the petition to release the JFK files. Here, Oliver Stone took all the trouble to make that movie and stir up this great case again, and now he's testified before Congress and called for releasing the Nixon, Watergate, White House tapes and the JFK files. A historical moment in American history has been achieved when somebody can address Congress and call for releasing the Nixon, White House tapes, which are the direct evidence of the role of George Bush and Richard Nixon in the assassination of John Kennedy. With that call now before Congress, it's important that people respond to it. Please write to us today. Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope or a donation to help us with our expenses, and we will send you a petition to sign, which will be delivered to Oliver Stone's office, and Oliver Stone is going back to Congress to testify, and Stone has promised to take our petitions before Congress, present the petitions to Congress. So we now have a representative, a true representative of the people speaking before Congress. That is Mr. Oliver Stone. And we should seize this opportunity, this chance we have to get to Congress with the number of people that are truly interested in trying to release the Kennedy assassination and the Nixon Watergate tapes material. So please write to us or call us. Our phone number is 415-897-0153. And we will send you a petition. Also, coming up on July 19th is a special conference on the Kennedy assassination. There will be speakers at it. Michael Canfield, the author of the book that was banned in the United States for many, many, many years, Coup d'etat in America, which truly talked about the role of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis in the assassination of John Kennedy, the only book in the United States to do so in that period. Now it's becoming vogue to talk about it. So that's on July 19th. And by the way, I will see you all at the Juneteenth celebrations in San Francisco. On Juneteenth, we'll be talking about the assassination of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy, and also what Juneteenth means. Juneteenth, of course, is the day Lincoln issued his proclamation saying that all people in America are free, whether they're black or white, brown, red, or yellow. And so Juneteenth is an important celebration in the Rainbow Families community. And I invite all of you to come to the Juneteenth celebration. And then I invite you to come to the July 19th special conference on the assassination of Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, which will be held in Burlingame at a hotel there, 1240 Bayshore in Anza, at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And we will have some excellent speakers. I mentioned earlier Michael Canfield, also Dr. Gary Aguilar will be speaking, presenting new medical evidence showing that John Kennedy was indeed shot from the front. Yes, indeed. And that refutes the Johnson Warren Commission lie. And also there'll be a speaker, Alan Horn, a Vietnam veteran, and an expert on the political reasons why Kennedy was shot. Your host, Paul Kangas, will be speaking at the conference. And also we're going to have a special surprise guest speaking there, whose name prefers not to be used in public because he's quite well known. But it's not Oliver Stone. Maybe next time Oliver Stone, but not this time. So hopefully, by the way, it might be Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown is an invited guest. And so I'll give you a hint. Jerry Brown might be speaking at this conference on July 19th. We're trying to get the other presidential candidates. There's a Dr. Lenora Falani, who is a presidential candidate on the ballot. Now, that's an interesting angle. Women are really making strides in this period in history, aren't they? Here's a black woman, Dr. Lenora Falani, has made it onto the California ballot, running against George Bush and Clinton. What's Clinton's name? Anyhow, Bush and Clinton. So there's an important angle for those people that think that we should fight sexism and racism. There will be a black woman on the ballot in California that you can vote for. Of course she's not going to win, but would you rather vote for somebody you want in the White House and not get it? Or would you rather vote for somebody you don't want, like Clinton or Perot or Bush, and get them? I'd rather vote for somebody that I want and not get them than vote for somebody I don't want and get them. I don't know if that makes sense, but why work for something you don't want? You know, why? And people say, well, you know, Falani can't win. She's just a woman. She's just a black woman, and she's on the ballot, and she can't win because of that. And I say, well, I think it's important that women be elected into more corporate and government positions. At the point when 40% of the offices in the government and the corporations are held by women, then women will start acting in their own self-interest. And that means women will start speaking up about the need for childcare in this country and good medical care. because men aren't going to do it. Most men are so militaristic and isolated and alienated from reality that they are not capable of speaking up for things like child care. All right, this has been your host, Paul Kangas, speaking to you from radio station KPOO. And please keep the cards and letters coming, folks, because it helps us keep this program on the air. And send donations to KPOO. They need the money to stay on the air.